We are back for another edition of the Half Court Press podcast. It's been a little bit, a couple weeks. We had Christmas and New Year's, and Chris, you got to relax a little bit. I got to relax.
How was your New Year's?
Great.
Yeah.
What'd you do? Year's was good. Well, I watched basketball on New Year's, really? Actually. Yeah, and New Year's Eve was a relaxing day. Stayed at home. Yeah. Tried to tend to the dogs who are dealing with fireworks. They don't like it.
Oh, yeah. Mine doesn't either.
So, low-key New Year's Eve, and then basketball-centric ever since.
Yeah, I was going to say the next day was Creighton Marquette.
Yeah. What about you? How are you feeling?
It was good. I had friends that got married on New Year's Eve, which is a weird experience to go to a wedding on a Tuesday night and on New Year's Eve.
I guess it's a thing.
It is a thing. I didn't either until.
I saw a wedding party in downtown Omaha.
Did you
on
really?
New Year's Eve, leaving Creighton's practice.
I mean, it's a nice idea.
It's a cold idea.
Yeah, it is a cold idea in a lot of ways. but it was funny. It was funny because actually, in the way that our lives work, I turned my phone to mute at 6 o'clock. I mean, it was probably 5:55, so we get all set on into the church. The wedding is over at 6:30. I turn on my phone and hey, Nebraska had gotten a recruit 30 minutes ago. Mm. And so they were doing a receiving line, like the going to each pew, like, you know, hugging everybody as to lead them out. So I ran out to my car and turned it on, and I wrote a story in my notes app while fireworks were going off behind me and they were running out onto the party bus. And I was like, this is the weirdest place that I've filed a story. So it was good. Basketball intrudes.
Right. Nebraska basketball recruiting now is what, like 2 for 3 on holidays in terms of
Thanksgiving. They skipped Christmas, which I appreciated, but then they got New Year's Eve. I have covered a Christmas Day football commit. Have you ever had that
no,
before?
No, I don't think so.
Andrew Ward committed on Christmas Day 2016, maybe.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean,
I think this was before I was on the beat, but I think Mitch Balick for Creighton committed on Super Bowl Sunday.
Did he really?
Yeah, and actually, I did cover a Super Bowl Sunday commit for Nebraska football. I think once
you covered Nebraska football long enough, you probably hit all of them.
Yeah, you hit most of the holidays. But
why did Mitch Balick do it on, like, was it?
I don't know. Who knows?
Because he was a Super Bowl.
I doubt that it had anything to do with Super Bowl Sunday.
he just had decided.
Yeah, isn't that what it is? Like nobody really, they're not thinking about.
Well, Andrew Ward gave it as a Christmas gift to his mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was kind of sweet.
That is neat.
I was just going to say
Happy New Year.
Yeah,
Merry Christmas to all our listeners. We really appreciate you sticking with us and listening. Sorry, we took a couple weeks off. But
I think a lot of people did too.
Right, trying to fit schedules together. But we're back now. We'll be on a regular routine talking hoops, Nebraska and Creighton, as they make their way through two really, really tough conferences. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll start with the Jays. I mean, this is Creighton's hosting Villanova. We're recording this on a Monday. Tomorrow, the Jays are going to host Villanova for, I don't know, to this point, it's the biggest game of the season, and it might end up being the most important game of the year. It's obviously an opportunity for Creighton to make a statement. Villanova has won the league every year but one since the Big East reconstruction. It's the class of the league, and it's, you know, that the Wildcats are going to be there at the end, and you have them on your home court, and so it's a chance for the Jays to kind of, you know, like let people, you sort of say, hey, like here we are, mm-hmm. we are contenders for if you want to be Big East contenders, you have to win games on your home court, especially against the top tier teams in the conference. So. It's a chance for them to do that.
I'm curious about something. I mean, I don't disagree, but I think some people might hear you saying, I mean, this is the biggest game of the year so far, mile marker game. How important is it? Because it's early January.
Right.
I mean, it's only January. It's going to be January 7th when that game happens. But what happens if they win? What can the trajectory and what just happens? And what happens if they lose? Like, why is this an important game for both ways?
It's a good question. Because in the end, it's 1 of 18, right? Like they have 18 league games and but I don't know. I think it's more about it's the intangibles. It's the message that Creighton's going to send to the rest of the league. The Jays haven't, they weren't a title contender last year, you know, like, this team has the makeup, the potential to do it in a league that from top to bottom, there's not a lot of difference between 1 and 10. And at this point, even after a week, we've seen a couple of teams emerge after a week of play, but it certainly still feels pretty wide open. And if the Jays were to knock off Villanova and kind of, you know, sort of plant their flag in the hunt and say, hey, like we're right here. I think that's what it is. It's, mm-hmm. it's less about, I don't know if it's going to have, like from a team standpoint, I don't know if it'll have a lingering effect one way or the other. I do think it'd be a major confidence boost.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd agree with that.
But I don't know if it would, you know, if the season hinges on this, I wouldn't say that, but I think it is a pivotal moment.
Yeah. I think it's a statement game of like, yeah, like I think it's a good way, like planting your flag
yeah.
and saying like, hey, we're legitimate this year.
Well, you think like Villanova, I tweeted this out today, like Villanova is 16-2 coming off losses in Big East play. Like
really?
Villanova's dominated this league, mm-hmm. you know, and so conventional wisdom would say Villanova just lost to Marquette. Like, it doesn't lose very often in the Big East, even though it's going on the road back-to-back games. Like, Villanova's coming into Omaha like, hey, this is our game. Like, this is our league. We expect to win it. And if Creighton were able to kind of flip that on Nova, and, mm-hmm. and I think it sends a message not only to Nova but the rest of the league that Creighton's ready, because everyone knows what Villanova is and, mm-hmm. and knows how tough it is to – I mean, Villanova's had one losing streak in 6 years in league play. To give them another L, to put them at 1-2. They've never been 1-2, or they've never had a losing record in league play.
Hmm.
The Wildcats have since Big East reconstruction. So that's why I think it's an opportunity to kind of put everyone on notice.
And I don't think Villanova's quite what they were the last couple years.
Agreed. Yeah.
But still, they're not. They're not nothing. There's nothing
right.
to sniff at.
Yeah.
It's also so. I mean, just looked up the last time these two teams played, they went to overtime.
Yeah, that was last year mm-hmm. Where Creighton was – Tyshawn Alexander didn't play in that game. The Jays had kind of switched up their plan and played slow and tried to grind their way
yeah.
to win and almost got it. Probably yeah. should have got it. But, yeah, you're right. Villanova isn't the Villanova that it has been. But I think you always got to – if you want to be the champ, you got to beat the champs.
Right.
Isn't that what they
yeah.
say? You know,
mm-hmm.
so mm-hmm. the Wildcats are the reigning Big East champions. And they were my pick in the preseason to win the league because you got to knock them off before you beat them. So
right.
I'm intrigued to see how the Jays do. And, you know, it shapes up to be a really exciting game. Creighton is one of the best offenses in the country, and so is Villanova. And both teams have had their issues defensively. They have their flaws. So to me, it seems like a game that's going to be sort of a punches being thrown from both sides mm-hmm. type thing where mm-hmm. where one team hits you with a 10-0 run and the other team answers with a 10-2 run. I think it should be a really competitive game. And if you're Creighton, it's one of the reasons, you know, when you say, hey, Villanova's maybe not at the level that it has been, another reason why you got to win it.
Right. It's another thing, too, where I feel like the Big East, there's kind of just like a circle of like six or seven teams that at any point can kind of shoot out and be. And I think this is Creighton's opportunity to be like, all right, Villanova is a little bit worse. We're a little bit better this year. We're going to kind of maneuver a little bit up over these guys. And then, you know, maybe this is one of those years where, I don't know, Big Ten wise, and we'll talk about the Big Ten later, but you don't really know how good somebody is for a while. And so Nebraska beats Purdue and you're like, oh, it's a good win. And then Purdue only scores 37 points in a basketball game. And you're like, oh, they're bad. And so this is from another outside perspective for Villanova. It's interesting to me because it's like, okay, how good is Villanova? And this is also kind of like I think the Marquette game showed how good Creighton actually is. But I think this could be another moment for Creighton to really say, hey, we are this good. Look
yeah.
what we did to Villanova at home.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, again, I said it earlier, but like if you want to contend for a Big East title, which I think the Jays have the chance, they have a chance at doing that, you got to win at home. And beating the reigning champs at home would send a message that you're capable of doing that.
Do you want to talk Big East overall?
Yeah, we can. I think that I'm still, and maybe that's why I've kind of framed it this game in this way, but like I'm still kind of in the gathering data mode.
Sure.
For the Big East. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on. If you pin me down and said who's the favorite today, I would say Butler.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I really feel comfortable with that.
Yeah.
So
Why? Because they still sometimes when I see Butler at 14-1, I'm always like, it seems like a mid-major 14-1 where they haven't played anybody. But they have.
They've gotten some decent wins. Yeah. Like, I mean, their only loss is to top five Baylor team, but they lost by one on Baylor's home court. They play really tough defense. I think it's more the brand, the style that they play with. Like, Kamar Baldwin is a really good player, and he makes tough shots, but he doesn't play with a lot of flash, mm-hmm. and a lot of flair, and they just have a team full of guys like that, you know, if they're open, they're going to make it, they're going to rebound, play tough, and not make mistakes. So like they don't jump off the page, and their resume, like you said, it doesn't really jump off the page, but they're just solid. I mean, to be a one loss team at this point in the year,
yeah, no matter who you are.
It says something, mm-hmm. the consistency that they play with, and that's one of the reasons why I kind of tabbed them at this point as the quote unquote the favorite going in.
If you don't feel comfortable about Butler, do you have like three? I know you're still collecting data, but yeah. Are there three or four teams that you like more than others?
Well, I like Butler, I like Villanova, Seton Hall. Seton Hall was. Yeah, they got Miles Powell, and if you have Miles Powell, you got a chance.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a similar thing with Marquette, with Marcus Howard. Creighton did a good job of limiting him in Omaha, and then he goes off against Villanova and leads the Golden Eagles to a big-time win. So I'm almost like, I'll give you the teams that I don't believe in.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Like Georgetown, yeah. They look like they're going to have some issues, mm-hmm. Especially defensively. I think Providence, even though it's 2-0, or is it 2-0? I think
yeah, they're 2-0.
Yeah, 2-0. I don't know if the offense is sustainable.
But they beat Georgetown and DePaul.
Right. DePaul's another team. It hasn't figured out how to like win close games yet, so that's going to be a challenge and an issue in league play. But those teams aren't bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's similar. I mean, you get this in a lot of conferences, but you can't take a night off.
Yeah.
Like, I think even a bad shooting night that Creighton could have, even if it's against Georgetown, like, you still have to kind of be on your piece. Because
you got to find a way and that was, I think, one of the things that that the Jays were encouraged about until Butler. You know, mm-hmm. on Saturday, the Jays went to Butler and shot. I mean, to be fair, they're still encouraged about their ability to kind of find ways to win, even though they weren't able to against Butler. But to me, it was notable because it's the first time in Big East play that it's the league just started, obviously, but like they ran into a team that slowed the pace down. Creighton had two fast break points.
Really?
They got...
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, they limited Creighton's ability to kind of just space the floor and move the ball and work together offensively, kind of the collaborative style that Creighton's used to. The Jays had 7 assists, which is the lowest total they've had in 3 years. So Butler dictated the game flow. And then on top of that, Creighton shot 4 of 22 from three. So Butler dictated a lot of things, and the Jays weren't able to find a way to win. And you know, given the Big East and the makeup of some of these teams, that Creighton's going to be in games like that. And so it's won games like that already. Oklahoma, Arizona State, Texas Tech, Louisiana Tech. But, you know, now it's Big East play. So it's like it's almost a little bit different. Mm-hmm. These teams know Creighton really well. They know exactly what the Jays like to do, and they have some their own tactics and strategies to try to take those things away. So that to me is I'm very like obviously I think Tuesday is very important and it's an opportunity for Creighton to make a statement. But after that, the Jays go to Xavier, to Georgetown, Providence at home, to DePaul, and like those four games, they could all be sort of like
grinders.
Yeah, they could.
Yeah,
they could take that form. I don't know if Georgetown will. That's mm-hmm. usually a game that could go up tempo a little bit with the way Georgetown plays, but it's not going to be easy on the road. And that stretch is an opportunity for Creighton to really make a move. Mm-hmm. I think Villanova is sort of the way where you introduce yourself, and then after that you can make a move, but. Obviously easier said than done. The Jays have to take care of business. So
so Ken Pom wise, in the next 8 games, the projected score is within at most 7. Mm-hmm. And that's once. I mean, you've got 3, 4, 2, here's 1, 3, 5, 1. I mean, like this is This is the way that it's going to be. Yeah, every that's what I mean. Every game, it's going to be important.
Right. So we'll see what they can do. I'm interested in against Villanova. I'm interested to see Creighton right now is last nine games they are holding teams to 0.9 points per possession, 37% from the floor, field goal percentage, defensive field goal percentage. Can that defense? Can they maintain that defense? Can they carry that defense again over to a game in a game against Villanova where the Wildcats are the most efficient offense in the league? The Wildcats have length and height. They'll have that advantage at like three of the five positions on the floor, maybe four of the five positions on the floor. Villanova's really good. All those guys that Nova has are good at attacking the rim and also making jump shots. Like they put a lot of pressure on you and your defense's ability to sort of stay connected to at times they'll force you to help, and at times they kind of bait you into helping because then they know that they can just kick it back out for a jump shot or reverse the ball and then find another lane to attack or an open look. So it's going to take a lot. I'm curious about Creighton's defense, how the improvements that it's shown up until this point, if it can carry that over against Villanova, that's important. But obviously the Jays are going to have to score to beat Villanova, and so that's why it could shape up.
You started looking at NCAA sites yet?
I think Creighton's like 21st in the net.
Yeah, they're looking pretty good.
That's
right
a good
now.
Place to be.
Yeah,
but maybe talk in February. I would say, you know what? I mentioned that stretch. Creighton right now is 3-3 in quad one games, and then it's going to play Villanova, and then Xavier, then Georgetown. That's three more quad one games. I think you'll have a better feel of where they are after that.
I started looking last year.
I guess Providence wouldn't be a quad one game, but then after that, then they go to DePaul, another quad one. Then I think maybe Xavier at home. But yeah, like.
What I was going to say was
it could turn very fast.
So I was going to say, I started looking at NCAA ticket flights and hotels and all that on January 15th. That was the day after Nebraska beat Indiana last year. It's January 7th. So you're right. It's smart.
Dude, what is Nebraska's record since, like, what was Nebraska's record
in
2019?
Okay, in the year 2019?
Yeah, just like.
Not great, I tell you that much, homie. I mean, let's see. They went from 11-2 to 18-16. That's a good. That would have been a good question of what they actually were in 2019.
I didn't even like actually. But you
let's
mentioned.
See, how about
you,
I'll think about it this way. They won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, let's see. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. They won 14 games in the year.
In the whole year, 2019. Yeah, because you mentioned like January 15th. Thinking NCAA tournament, and that's when the spiral happened.
Oh, yeah, and I don't think that'll happen to Creighton. I think Creighton's mentally stronger than Nebraska's team was last year.
That's the thing about it in college basketball, though, is like, you know, you're an injury away from things being very difficult.
I know.
Even a team that like Creighton that seems to be in a good position. So anything
which, to your point, is why tomorrow is so important. It's a good resume builder. You kind of continue on the same track.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's good.
The Huskers, obviously, it's a different story. They're in a different position, playing Iowa next
tomorrow night.
Coming off a game against Rutgers, where Rutgers was just stronger and tougher, and it's kind of played out how you would imagine it would if Rutgers was locked in.
Yeah, I did a story earlier this year, at the very beginning of the year, about how. Poundage-wise, each team is. Rutgers is the thickest. And
they're the heaviest team.
They're the heaviest team. That's the normal person way for me to say it, but I couldn't think of that word. But when I saw that in, I think it was maybe October or November when I did that story, I remember thinking like, oh, this is not going to go very well when these two teams play. Nebraska was close, but it was also one of those things where they were just worn down. I mean, you were just getting... I mean, Rutgers was so much better than Purdue at just getting to the bucket and finishing. And that was one thing that was so drastic in that game was when Rutgers went to the cup, they dunked it or they dished it, and it was a pretty easy layup. But when Nebraska went to the cup, like there was a couple times when Deshaun Burke was like flailing because he got knocked and there wasn't a foul called and he hit the ground really hard, or people were changing their shot and trying to just, I mean, it was just one team was going strong and one team was not. And it was like, that's Nebraska's issue, is they're not big enough. They can do those things. The problem with tomorrow night is
Luka Garza.
Yeah,
he is that guy.
He's on, I'm putting him on 2020 watch. Like there's a legitimate chance he gets 20 points, 20 rebounds. Like it's an issue. I didn't even realize, do you know what the last stats were for the Penn State game?
Mm-mm.
He had like 34 and 15. Like he is on a roll. And
Penn State has some dudes too.
And Penn State's extremely good. Yeah.
The thing about Luka is, and I'm sure like he is, you know, how you make those lists if you're a fan of players we hate in this league, like he's probably on a lot of people's list. But I love the dude, man. He plays so hard.
He does.
There's such emotion with him. I gotta imagine he's licking his chops after watching the Rutgers film.
Has to be. And that's one thing too, where Iowa, you know, they have some, you know, Jordan Bohannon's not playing, so they're basically, and they're also down a couple guys. I saw a report today on Twitter that they've got some guys that are sick.
Oh.
And some guys kind of coming back, and even with Jordan, I mean, you could tell after Jordan Bohannon left, it was like, all right, it's the Luka Garza and Joe Wieskamp show. Like if we can't get, so we're going to throw it to Luka, and if he can score, awesome. If he can't, throw it to Joe, see if he can do something. If not, then like try it again. And so it's like just these two. So that's the one thing that's interesting too, is, you know, with Rutgers, they were one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the country. And so it was like, you could try and pack it in and just hope that they don't make some threes. And I think they only had 4 or 5, which is like their season average. With Purdue, who again only scored 37, 38 points in a game, who they're clearly not very good, but their Nebraska's defense worked because they were just like, we're going to make you make shots. Purdue didn't finish at the rim. With Iowa, it's an issue because it's not like, okay, you got Luka and we're going to put 3 guys on him, or we're going to go zone and make sure we have him no matter what. But Iowa, I mean, they can make 10, 11, 12 threes in a game, and they're a good shooting team, especially Joe Wieskamp. And so that's the issue, where it's like you have to pick your poison. And Nebraska's not that great defensively anyway. The thing about Iowa is they always kind of leave the door open a little bit because they're really not that great defensively.
I feel like they've been better.
So they're 13th in scoring defense in the Big Ten right now. At the same time, though, some of that is, you know, they're a high volume possession team, so you get more possessions or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's the one thing about Iowa is they're always really good offensively, but then on defense, they're not great. Now, I will say, last year against Nebraska, they were fantastic. I mean, Fran McCaffrey coached an incredible game, threw out so many different defenses, got Isaiah Roby in foul trouble and ran away with it. That was in Iowa City. And then the game at PBA last year, I don't know if people probably remember, it was the beginning of the Johnny Trueblood Renaissance.
Yeah.
And so the Nebraska, we were talking about this with a couple of reporters at practice today. They made 9 straight shots in the final 47 seconds and went to overtime and then ended up winning. Anyway, this is a small tangent, but Iowa always leaves the door open a little bit. So if Nebraska can actually make some shots and go up and down, then maybe this could be close. Problem is the last 2 games, Nebraska shot less than 35% from the floor. It's the first time that's happened. So the last game they played against Rutgers was their second worst shooting night of the season. They didn't shoot very well against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. So it's one of those things where, okay, maybe the trend is going toward, it's going to happen again. They're in a funk. They don't really know. They're not finding their shots. Or you kind of go up to the mean and you have a good shooting night after a while. So
it does. And you said this earlier on the podcast, but like this is a team. Actually, you tweeted the roller coaster. GIF. Like, when was that? It was after Purdue, maybe.
Purdue, yeah.
But we kind of talked about how it would kind of go up and down a little bit, and
the team Nebraska has. They're gonna it's entirely on how they show up that day. Because they practice well. Fred Hoiberg's obviously a good coach. Like this is the hand that you're dealt with.
Here's
and
my
it's,
question:
it's just, you don't know if they're gonna shoot well. You don't know if they're gonna shoot poorly, or if they're gonna be motivated or not. Like it's just, that's what you've got.
It's interesting because while we do look at sort of the game to game with Nebraska, there's always sort of this sense of like, this year is the foundation, the opportunity for the Huskers to set the foundation. It's more about like projecting out mm-hmm. and looking ahead, and you just wrote a story about like Iowa State's first year under Fred, where they whether 16-16.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of what, like, as fans are watching these games, like what things should we be looking for to try to assess progress? You know, like,
yeah.
what defining characteristics do you think came out of that first year when Fred was at Iowa State? Are they the same now? Or like, yeah. What does success maybe
good,
look like? Because the win
question.
Total isn't, I mean,
yeah,
it doesn't really, ultimately, it doesn't really matter mm-hmm. the win total because they're building towards something.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a really good question because
maybe we don't know it yet.
So the thing is so that story was birthed out of this idea of, so they were 13-2 going into conference play and then
Iowa State was.
Yeah. Iowa State, Fred Hoiberg's very first year. And so it's just this idea of, we always talk about how they were 16-16 and you can take that fact and move on immediately quickly. You're like, okay, they're 500 and then you move on. But if you actually dissect it, they lost 10 in a row at one point near the end of the year and lost 12 of 13. And it's one of those things where if Nebraska this year lost 12 out of 13 games from January 8th to February 22nd, at some point there would be someone somewhere thinking, well, this isn't the guy, or, well, this isn't working, or this, you know, just like panic mode. But this happened at Iowa State. The next year they went to the NCAA tournament. The year after that, I mean, just things really started going.
Right.
So I wanted to know, and I've been talking with Thad, our editor, about this, of just like, what's this really like? Like, what is it like to actually go through this? And so as someone who loved watching those teams in the early 2010s, I got to talk to Melvin Edgem for a little bit about it. And I talked to Chris Babb, who was a transfer. And it's one of those things where in the moment, you don't exactly understand what's happening, but when you're in the, you know, Big 12 tournament title game, you're thinking back to like, well, this isn't the, you know, okay, I know in the first Big 12 title game they played in, they began like 1 of 15 from the floor against Baylor and kind of got into a little bit of a hole. And it's one of those things where you harken back and you're like, well, we've done with this before. We've been 1 of 15 from the floor before. I remember my freshman year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, and also I remember my freshman year and now we're here. And this is what I did to persevere through those tough times. And so it was interesting to talk to those guys. I don't know specifically right now if there's anything that game by game you're looking at and saying, I feel good because of this. I think the only thing I can think of, or at least something that I always look for, is when it looks, the Indiana game, the reason why Indiana and Purdue were so interesting to me was every time something happened, Nebraska always punched back. They hit a three, they got transition, you know, they were able to force the other opponent to call a timeout. Like when Nebraska's back is against the wall, do they fight? Do they actually go back?
And maybe that's what this year is about. Because it's kind of sounds like what you're saying with Iowa State.
Because that's
like,
what they talked about. That's what Melvin Edgem talked about all the time. Yeah. And that's what, so Fred Hoiberg, I talked to him about this. And in those games, in that 10 game losing streak, they lost, there was a lot of close games. And that was, so they lost to Oklahoma State in overtime. They lost to Oklahoma in overtime. They played Kansas pretty close for a while. Kansas State, which ended up going to the NCAA tournament that year, they won on kind of a fluky play. Jacob Pullen lost the ball and then it bounced off somebody's thigh and went right back to him and he scored with, you know, like 0.2 seconds left or something like that. And so it was when I was asking Fred Hoiberg about this. I was like, you know, this is your first year head coach. Like, you've never coached a team before. How were you not panicking? I mean, like, what was it like? Because that was one thing that the Melvin Edgem and Chris Babb said was Fred was so cool that we respected that. He didn't come out and run us like crazy because we were losing. He didn't scream at us. He was really calm, and that really calmed us. And the thing that I asked Fred, I was like, well, how did you stay calm? I mean, if you lose 10 things in a row, yeah, like, you're not going to feel great.
No.
And he was like, the one thing was we were out there battling every night and we were in the game and I saw the effort there. And so that's one thing where, you know, you don't want to like create a cop out for if Nebraska gets blown out or if they lose 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 games in a row, you don't want to, you know, excuse it by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I think that Fred Hoiberg is legitimate and what he's saying of like, he's not panicking is if he sees fight, then that's fine. Cause again, win loss doesn't matter. It didn't matter to them that year either. That was one thing Melvin Edgem said was so interesting was, on all the basketball teams he's ever been on, after a win, after a loss, practices were different, or the coach was different, or body language was different. and it wasn't on that team. And it was interesting even today at practice. You know, Nebraska just got their butt kicked by Rutgers. I mean, got their butt kicked. And everyone's all smiles. I mean, it was a light practice. Hoiberg was, I mean, he was in a good mood. You know, Thor is doing soccer skills over there. Shamil Stevenson, like, botched a dunk. And everyone was laughing and joking with them. Like, it was a light. And so there's two sides you can think of that. One is like, well, they're soft. They don't care. You know, that they're not very good and they get it. Like, they're punting on the season, whatever. Yeah. The other side of this is like, even though they got their butt kicked against Rutgers, like, they see progress and they're kind of moving in that way. The other side of this coin is the transfers that Iowa State had that first year, you know, Chris Babb, Royce White, Chris Allen, they dominated practice, and to the point where there was one story that Fred told me about. They were the scout team guys, and mm-hmm. there was one day they were doing scout team stuff, and you know, they got a Chris Babb got a rebound, and there was an outlet. It was like rebound, outlet, alley-oop, dunk in like 4 seconds. And Bobby Lutz was the assistant coach at the time, and he whistled and he was like, guys, the guys we're playing are good, but they're not that good. So, like, please stop. And so that was the other reason why Fred felt good, was like, okay, I understand we're losing all these games in a row, but our transfers are going to be good. And I think they feel the exact same way about these transfers with Derek Walker and Delano Banton. So anyway, a long-winded answer, but I think how you look for progress if you're a fan is like, when their back is against a wall, do they come out and do they fight and do they ever quit? That was one thing about Rutgers where they were just worn down. And they didn't really fight back. And so night by night, you have to see that. That's the one thing I think that's tangible you can actually see.
Yeah. I think the other thing, this is just my own personal.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Less about, it actually kind of ties into just sort of fight and kind of being able to absorb blows and go. But like, I think defensively, the level of engagement and focus is something that I'm kind of like interested in watching. Like, I'd like to watch a game in February mm-hmm. versus a game in December and see a difference in terms of the way that they're, you know,
competing.
Competing, but also just, is there a more acknowledgement of what's going on around them? You know, like, do they just seem more focused and locked in and less sort of flat footed mm-hmm. and just sort of like, oh, yeah, we're playing defense, but
yeah, we're on the defensive end.
Yeah, we're on.
We don't have the ball anymore.
That was one thing too, because like, yeah, sure, the way that Fred Hoiberg has it set up, like, they're going to be an elite offensive team, and they're going to push pace, and you know, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, especially when you add the transfers in. But they're also going to have sort of an element where it's 75-75 with 3 minutes left, you got to get a stop.
Yep.
So that's when it's a level of just like, I wasn't 100% sure if when I watched, like, because I've watched them one time live, mm-hmm. it was not a good game.
Yeah.
But that first half, like, there wasn't a lot of effort.
Correct.
And so that is like, I mean, they turned it up as the game went on, so you credit them for that. But I guess that's kind of what I'm saying or looking for is like in February. That, you know, when you turn on the game, it's like, okay, yeah there's improvement there.
Yeah.
Like, and I say effort, but it's more like, I don't know. It's like this sort of element of being completely, I don't know if it's engaged or just knowing.
It's like a want to.
Yeah. Something like that.
Because the thing that's a good point that I think of is, there's the difference between losing streaks, because I think Nebraska is going to probably lose quite a bit in the next couple months. And if they don't, great. That's fun. But their Big Ten is extremely good. The difference between last year's losing streak and this year's losing streak potentially is last year's losing streak. I mean, they went to Rutgers. So they lost to Michigan State, and then they went to Rutgers and they lost. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where the effort wasn't there. They weren't engaged. You're talking about defensively, all these things.
Yeah, right.
And it was, and the reason why that was disappointing was it was a lack of effort when you know that they know better.
And they know how to do it.
This year, the lack of effort at Creighton,
up to it.
The lack of effort at Creighton. Now, again, I don't say this to excuse them. They were bad, but the lack of effort at Creighton was a little bit of like, they don't quite know better yet. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, they don't know exactly what it takes because they're so young, and all these guys have not played before. It's this thing that coaches like to say all the time is, like, you hear this a lot in football and basketball of, you know, well, what do you like about this kid, or what's his issue? And the thing they'll always say is, like, well, the problem is they don't know what they don't know. Mm. And that's the one thing that they're learning, is I think that's why sometimes they realize, like, oh, this is what it takes to guard on an elite level. I mean, Indiana and Purdue, they guarded well. I mean, they gave up 96 points to Indiana, but they actually did guard pretty well that game. But then you look at the way they played against Rutgers, and it was like, that's not how effort works at all.
Right.
So it's a good point. I mean, I think that if you're a Nebraska fan, yeah, look at defensive effort as well. That's a good point.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious how much progress is made there. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anything else that we need to touch on?
I don't think so.
How do you feel about this Big Ten race right now? Like, you asked me about the Big East, and let me ask you about the Big Ten. What?
I mean, I think Michigan State...
Has Michigan State reemerged?
I think so.
It was initially, we both thought, hey, Michigan State's a team.
Yeah.
Started slow.
The most interesting thing about the Big Ten, I think, is their team... Let's see. There are 10 teams still that are projected between 12-8 and 9-11. So that's four games, basically. Oh. So it's just like a total logjam.
Yeah.
I think Penn State's really good. I think that Michigan State's really good.
Like, when you say Penn State's really good, is
Penn State's really good for Penn State? Like, Penn State's like
Penn State
a
standards?
Five seed. Five, oh, six, that's pretty good, five, though. Six, seven seed.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah.
So, like, they're
how
good
would you,
enough
how
to,
would
like,
you rank? Give me your, like, top five. How are you feeling about, like, Michigan
that's
State's
good,
that's
one. Michigan State.
Would you say?
Ohio State.
Ohio State, too? Okay.
Yeah. They're a weird team where they're probably the best team in the country until sometimes they're just not.
I know.
You know what I mean? There's no reason that they should be losing to Wisconsin and Minnesota.
But is it possible that some flaws have been revealed here?
Maybe. But I just think Ohio State at their best is just damn hard to stop.
Yeah.
So I'd say Michigan State.
They're not shooting it great.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
So Michigan State, Ohio State. I like Penn State. I like Maryland.
So do you like Penn State over Maryland right now, or how?
I don't know. Maryland is more. They're more talented.
That was a long.
Yeah. It's one of those things where do you take the talent, or do you take, like? There are sometimes, like,
Penn State, team of destiny, maybe.
Right. That's what I'm saying. There are sometimes where teams are just like, you know what? Like, I would take those scrappy guys.
They're like building momentum. They should play all their games in the Palestra, by the way.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal.
All of a sudden, people are going to games there.
Yeah, that was great to watch.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I watched a game earlier this year. I can't remember who it was.
Anyway, wait. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just saying, there was a game earlier this year. I can't remember who it was. And it was, you know, they were playing at home. And I was like, are you sure they're playing at home? Because there's a bunch of people there.
Yeah.
And this doesn't look right. I would also say Michigan. I mean, Michigan is they're kind of going through a hem and a haw.
Livers is hurt.
Yeah.
Best shooter. Yeah. So that's a problem.
But I think
they don't have a lot of depth.
Juwan Howard has won me over.
Yeah.
I think he's a good coach. I think he's a good guy. So I think that they're going to be something you have to actually deal with. But I just think in general, again, the Big Ten, unless you're playing Northwestern, most of the time when you're playing Nebraska, you're probably gonna win. But I mean, other than Nebraska and Northwestern, it's kind of a toss up every single night. You don't really ever know. And if you catch Nebraska on the right night, then it's gonna be difficult.
That's what's fascinating. I feel like the Big Ten has a little bit better. It's better at the top than the Big East, but the Big East doesn't have the Nebraska and Northwestern at the bottom. So what would you rather face? Like, would you rather have, like look at Minnesota's schedule. Pull up Minnesota. Like, would you rather have would you rather, like, deal with the elite that you're going to have to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they go Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State next.
Yeah, they do. You know what this is called? This is called the Richard Pitino gets fired at the end of the year schedule.
Perhaps. Good thing they found a way to beat Northwestern, because Bush, like, that's the thing. They get Northwestern that game, and then they have to play elite. Whereas
the
in the Big East, it's like
you
don't get.
You rather play the top of the top and also really bad teams, or every night just play like a pretty good.
But
team.
You only get like one or two of those really bad teams.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. That's a good question. It's tough. I mean, the thing is too. I think Big Ten. This is just the way the Big Ten is, and it's interesting because Nebraska, again, they're super young.
How do you think?
They just got to get some calluses on their bruises. Is basically what they're.
This is, may not even be Hoiberg's in his like view right now. Like it may, he's driving down the interstate trying to figure things out. He's not even thinking about this exit that's 200 miles down the road. But like building in the Big Ten, it seems very daunting, right?
Like this, what do you mean building this kind
building
of program,
a program
in the Big Ten?
Yeah, to be a consistent sort of winner in this league when you're talking about having to compete with the Minnesotas or the, and this is like the Minnesotas, even a team, even a program like Penn State, those are like at, those are the teams that are traditionally at the bottom. I'm not talking about like Wisconsin, Purdue, Illinois. I mean,
here's how I would respond to that. I think Tim Miles was more cognizant of what everybody else in the Big Ten was doing, who they were recruiting, what Nebraska needed to do if it was going to look like a Big Ten team, and was more external in the way he thought of that thing, the way of those things. I think Fred is very internal. I think he's very, like, because I don't look at Delano Banton and Derek Walker and Shamil Stevenson. I mean, Derek Walker and Shamil are pretty big, but Delano is kind of an odd mix into the Big Ten, but damn, he's good. You know what I mean? Like, I think there were some times where I don't think that Fred is very concerned about building a team that when they walk off the bus, you're like, oh, that's a Big Ten team. You know, is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah. Well, in a way, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you answered it in that Fred's not, he's not really wired to assess who he's competing with. He knows what it's going to take.
Yes.
And so he's just building something that
he knows what he likes and what works.
Right.
And I think his thing is in a similar way of a lot of coaches where it's like, I know what works. It doesn't matter what conference I'm in.
Yeah.
Now
I just think it's going to be interesting.
As you go along, you'll see whether or not that actually, you know, sometimes you have to tweak that.
Yeah.
I think that there are probably, I don't know, maybe you disagree. Do you think Creighton, do you think they've changed since they've changed in the Big East?
Oh, well, definitely.
So that's my thing. But so sometimes you have to cater to your
conference.
But
that's different because Fred Hoiberg was at a power conference. And
yeah, but the Big 12 and Big 10 are different.
They are, but I guess they're still similar levels, sure. Whereas Creighton went from the Valley to the Big East.
Right.
So it's like it's a different jump. All right. I feel like we've
emptied our notebooks.
We've emptied the notebook. I like that. We should have like a little segment where we just like,
hey, by the way, here's something I found.
I saw this the other day.
Here's an empty the notebook. Note. Here, hold on, I saw it a second ago. Nebraska's 11th in average length of possession.
There you go.
They're going fast. They're also 348th in offensive in deterring offensive rebounds.
Okay, yeah, that's.
And 348th in free throw percentage. Boy, that's the weirdest thing in the world, isn't it?
As a segue, if Nebraska and Creighton play today, who would grab more rebounds?
Creighton by 10, 11. Points-wise, I think Creighton probably wins. Ugh, I think it's probably pretty similar. What was it, 19? I think they probably
won
19. By,
yeah,
like,
it's probably
22.
About that. Yeah. 19 with a late run by Nebraska. That was what it was.
Yeah.
It'd probably be about the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably
All right.
Still true.
Well, good chat, Chris. As always, had a good time. You're going to be covering a couple games this week.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two on the schedule as well, so we'll have plenty of coverage on Omaha.com about the Huskers and the Jays. Big one for Creighton, obviously, on Tuesday. Nebraska's got a rivalry game. Can we call it that? We can, right? Against Iowa?
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure.
Fans
yeah.
feel that way.
Yeah.
So plenty to read, plenty to react to, and we hope you'll do that with us over the next week. We'll be back, I would imagine, at some point next week to break it down and preview.
Yeah. We'll not be, I don't know exactly when we'll speak, but it won't be long.
Very good. Thanks, Chris.